Welcome to East Meets West, episode 24, coming to you from Oakland, California. We're back in our old haunts with our old equipment, so yeah, it doesn't sound as good as it was the past couple weeks.
Yeah, the past couple of weeks sounded fantastic.
That's because we were using $1 million equipment, but now we're using $30 equipment again. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And this is the podcast of indeterminate ideas. What was it? Bizarre, random, and always strange? Strange, random, and always bizarre?
Always bizarre.
Always bizarre. No, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on us to be bizarre.
All right. Is it? Do we need to say something bizarre?
Like avocados.
You should wear shoes on your ears.
You should wear avocados on your feet instead of shoes.
Hey, you know why doesn't everyone just skip wearing clothes and just wear edible, you know, accoutrements?
Okay, like, now we're going to a place that I totally do not want to.
Exactly.
That's not bizarre. That's just
dirty.
TMI. this is episode 24.
24.
I've been finding significance in the numbers.
Have you?
I'm sort of an amateur numerologist. Yeah, but 24, I got nothing. Doesn't give me any kind of feelings.
Four, six. You know, you can add it up to six, multiply them to eight.
Two, four, six, yeah, eight. Who do we appreciate?
Me.
All right, we only got three comments.
Yes,
I'm on episode 23.
I'm almost borderline disappointed.
Granted, it was a short episode.
Yes, it was.
And the entire East Meets West site was down on Sunday, but that was before episode 23 posted.
Exactly. Because
I couldn't post it. In case you were wondering why it was so late last week, I was sick and
he infected the machines he was using.
And it was rainy, and so we did it on Monday, but then Monday night...
We recorded the podcast. We
Monday
really
night,
do it.
Subbrilliant.com was down because my web host had a database overload, and so I wasn't able to publish it that evening. I had to wait till the next morning. So that could be why we only have three comments. We may have blown it, Roger.
Oh, no, we've destroyed our loyal
We've
following.
Eroded our fan base. Well, we haven't eroded...
our demographic statistics.
The first comment is from Patrick.
Patrick who?
I don't know. Is this the Patrick we know or the Patrick we don't know? But I don't think it's the Patrick we know.
No.
It's Patrick we're getting to know. Just thought I'd tell you guys what a great show you have. Since last week when I found it, I have gone back and listened to all your old eps. Keep up the great work. And Roger, do you still have that arcade box you built on Call for Help? That was really cool.
Wow, someone remembers that.
I know. That's really cool.
Actually, no, because it was really heavy. And when we all got kind of rolled out on our collective rumps, that was one of the things I didn't want to take.
It was also not technically your property to take, Roger.
True, but someone else actually did take that burden off my hands.
Are you gonna rat him out?
I actually don't remember the name.
Oh, okay.
Anymore. I remember the face, but I can't remember the name.
Charles Hirshhorn.
Yeah, that sounds like a good one. You go with that one.
I remember when you were building that, you were all excited. I remember watching
it. Yeah, and then it was done, I was excited. And then after a couple of weeks, it's cool.
Comment number two from Timothy. For any Studio Ghibli, Miyazaki, Hayao, Ursula Le Guin, Earthsea series fans out there, Tales from Earthsea just finished final production cuts and will be opening in July in Japan. The film, though, is actually directed by Miyazaki Hayao's son, Goro. I wonder how soon before it opens in the U.S. in limited markets, of course.
I have no idea, but I'm sure some aspiring fans would probably try to import it early on. And if there are any kind of fan base groups that are like that are of a critical base, like, you know, there's that critical base, they would try to get it and then try to show it.
I believe what Timothy was saying is how long before he can legally see it, not rip it off a torrent.
No, I'm talking about
Roger.
Ordering online and getting it shipped over here from the
Rising Sun. Okay, all right. They're
going to
put it out on DVD immediately
from
Japan?
Hey, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, it's the funny
simultaneous
thing,
release.
The funny thing about Japanese DVDs is they never lower in price. They don't do bargain like bins. A DVD can be like, what, 5 years old? I mean, if it's not like an American movie release that's like so cheap that they have to, you know, it's, you know, if you get like Japanese, it's always like expensive. It's always like 50 yen. Or not 50 yen, like 5,000 yen. So it's like 50
And that bucks. Price is the price.
Yeah, always. And it's like, there's no price sticker, it's on the back of the box. You know, right next to the region is the price.
Well, now is that why you have more piracy in Japan? Because you don't have as many pirated DVDs coming out of the United States. There are some. But it seems like... Well, actually, they don't really come out of Japan either, do they? They mostly come out of China and Taiwan.
Hong Kong silvers. And, yeah. It's it could be. But, you know, the thing is...
I had a theory going there, but then I realized...
Not a lot of Japanese speak...
The Japanese English. Pirates are all from Japan, too.
Yeah, speak English well enough to actually have, like, to rip an American version and watch, because it wouldn't make as much sense.
Right.
So they usually what you'll have is the pirates will work on trying to get the official dub.
Price is the price in Japan.
Yeah.
What? Sucks. How does that happen, though? Because everything's so expensive there. Is there something that's cheap that allows you to afford all the other stuff?
No, it's just that you any hope of owning your own home or even a condo of this magnificent size, you chuckle. But listen, you know.
No, I know. Relatively speaking,
your disposable income on things that most Americans would do, like housing, automobiles, and stuff. I mean, cars there.
That's what I was wondering. So you can't afford a lot of these bigger ticket items. So you have more money to spend on smaller things.
Exactly. And you know, the thing is, they actually have a class of car. Like, I guess you call it a sub compact, that are, like, extremely cheap, but you roll through them, like, every three or four years.
Mm-hmm. Like cell phones.
Yeah.
Yep. Finally, comment number three, Andy Melton. I took the show to bed with me last night
for some reason.
I got hungry. Great show, guys. It's because we're always talking about food.
Yeah, but he said he took it to bed.
I don't know, Roger. I mean, why you gotta do that second time? Strike two.
Oh, jeez.
Jason, the original listener, Jason, who's actually in the Bay Area now.
Maybe they're
covering rugby.
Maybe they're all on vacation. Maybe all our loyal Vista listeners are on vacation. They took
all of last week off before the long U.S. holiday.
I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway, Jason says, you guys did not mention the result of the Italian elections about a month ago. It was amazing the Berlusconi lost by such a small margin. Well, I have to get some sleep in preparation for my trip to Santa Clara.
It's because everyone in Italy knows that all Italian politicians, whether you're a fascist, a communist, or something in between, is crooked.
Uh-huh.
And that's the problem, is everyone kind of assumes that their politicians are crooked, and invariably they tend to be.
Well, it was kind of amazing that Berlusconi that he couldn't fix the election, really. I mean,
well, the thing is that
he protested the results and...
At that point, I mean, you know, everyone's going to be looking at you, and being part of the EU...
But he got away with so much previous to that. I thought there might be a way that he could get a recount done and go back into his favor.
And accomplish exactly what? Since he
and get elected,
but he hasn't done anything worth, you know.
Maybe not for the people. He's done a lot for himself.
Maybe he could do more as a private. Well, yeah, you know, once the Italians get in that mood, it's probably not a good sign to stay around. I mean,
that's amore.
I mean, come on, Mussolini. Look how he ended up. He ended up hanging from a lamppost.
Yeah, wasn't he? Yeah, I was going to say he was on a gibbet, but yeah, he was hanging from a lamp.
He was hung by a mob of angry Italians.
I want to say he was hung from a gibbet, because that just sounds good.
That was a gibbet.
It's something you hang people from.
I just call it a hanging post.
And in Italy, they call it a Mussolini post now.
Interesting. At least, but see, do the range run on time anymore? Or the trains run on time?
Do the rains run on time?
The trains
You've
run
gotta
on time.
You've got to stop drinking before the podcast, my
no,
friend.
No, you don't understand. I need
this
to start
This ain't Dignation.
Drinking. I need to start drinking. Well, you always got to knock Dignation that
I
way.
I didn't knock it. They can do it. They are professional drinkers. Except for their one Tahoe podcast, which
the one
is of some note.
The Teetotaler's Guide to Tahoe.
Yeah. If you don't like drinking, don't watch that podcast. But they make it very clear. That's what, you know.
Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should just drink wheatgrass and wheat germ and all the other.
Yeah, we should come up with an affectation. Not that Kevin and
Dan or no Alex.
Oh, Alex. No, not that Kevin and Alex. I'm sorry, Alex. Not that Kevin and Alex.
I've never met Alex. So I'm sorry.
Are having an affectation. I was not trying to say that. But maybe a good...
Having an affectation.
Yeah, I, you know, as far as the drinking thing, I don't think it's a gimmick for them, but... Well, it is a gimmick for them, but I think they also really drink. I think we should come up with something we wouldn't normally do as a...
bring out the leather and chains?
As a gimmick. God, what is it with you today?
All right. How we do this, we do, like, weird chants in the beginning, like in very new agey. And then every like 10 minutes you'll hear chimes in the background.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe at the end we'll end with a gong instead of the sitar.
You think the wheatgrass thing is, you know, we just change the whole tempo, bring it down, be very, very zen-like.
Yeah, and then basically each sentence we have will extend at least 2 to 3 times as long.
Uh-huh. And so this is brilliant. We'll only have to do a third of a show.
Exactly.
Like we did last week, but people won't know because it'll be a half hour long.
Jonathan. Who's Jonathan? Exactly.
Uh-huh.
See? We're there.
It's working for me now. Now I get it.
Already the stones begin spinning.
You got to have stones to do something like that. No, yes. I don't like wheatgrass, though.
All right. What's some other very hippie?
Why do we got to go hippie? Can we go beatnik?
You know what? I can't.
I think you'd look good in a turtleneck.
I don't know. I think you should wear the black tights.
No. No. Maybe 10 years ago. But I don't think I could pull it off now.
And then wear sunglasses and I'll wear that really douchebag looking beret on my head.
I always felt like the beatniks were just, I mean, infinitely cooler than the hippies, though.
Whatever. I kind of group them as not together, but I, you know, it's
oh, but they're so different. I mean, totally self-absorbed groups.
But see, that's what I'm saying. But I'm not saying that they are the same.
Right.
I believe that in the end, it was just more of a, it was a very hedonistic kind of thing that I don't just.
Yeah, but it was all about art, man, and
yeah,
poetry, and
yeah,
wearing black,
our kind
and
of
snapping,
art, our kind
and jazz,
of
and so much
our
amazingly,
kind of music, our kind of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, all of those movements, every
exactly.
movement is always like that. But
I think we should do. I think we should continue on the Simpsons one called the Movementarians.
I kind of like that. I like the movementarian idea. Except
a very minimalist lifestyle.
You know, I would like to go with a unification of all crazy movements, but then you already have the Unitarians. They took the name. You can't be the Unification Church. That name's taken too. It's not really a church we're talking about. We're talking about a movement, you know, lifestyle.
You know, abscond. You what do you do when you kind of morph? Not morph, but you absorb the absorbitarians.
You're killing me here.
The absorbitarians.
It sounds like a paper towel commercial. Now with absorbitarianism.
Hey, well, you never know. Whatever.
But to beat that, you don't think the beatniks were much cooler than the hippies, huh? I don't know why. Maybe it's the jazz. I mean, jazz is so fantastic.
I think it's because they all wear black.
They look, well, the berets. I was never down with the berets. The non-beret wearing beatniks, yeah. But the berets got it. No. That was where I drew the line.
Hmm.
Not that I ever was a beatnik. But.
Yeah. What other
hippies are, you know, and God bless you if you're a hippie. I'm not trying to bash on it, but a little earthy for me, a little dirty for me.
We could be like English rockers, or
kind of like to take a shower every once in a while.
Yeah,
don't like the smell of patchouli.
I find very few people do.
No, there are. I know people who love the smell of patchouli. I lived with them in Austin. There were people in Austin, Texas who loved the smell.
That's why you got to quit living under overpasses, dude.
No, was that not living with them? I mean, I lived in the city, the same city as them. I actually worked with them.
Yeah, you worked at a bookstore.
Yes.
And it would
there were real human being people who liked the smell of patchouli. Not that I understand it, but.
All right. Let's see. What's another movement or a sub-genre culture? You could be a fanboy. We could be fanboys.
This is actually bringing up an interesting question. Were there any movements before the beatniks that weren't specific? You know, I mean, there were the Dadaists, but they were very much an art movement.
The Romantics?
Yeah, I suppose if you jump back. But I mean, immediately previous. I guess it was World War II sort of disrupted it. Yeah, I guess there was a movement. It was called Nazis. Not too popular.
Monkish.
Bobby Soxers.
Yeah.
I guess the F. Scott Fitzgerald, the 30s.
The whole kind of... doing the Charleston.
Yeah, Ernest Hemingway came out of that kind of, you know, and did his thing.
And then the flapper. Oh, the flappers.
Flappers. There you go. Absolutely. Right.
That, so you want to do flapper affectation? I don't know any.
I think we should do flapper. We should research this. You know, don't try to do it off the cuff.
No.
But, yeah. This is something we need commentary help with, though.
Swingers.
Yeah, what came after hippies? Punks? Punks came after hippies.
Yeah, so did metalheads.
Punk and then, yeah, metal. Metal had its kind of glory days in the late 80s.
New Wave, which was often...
New Wave was sort of a punk New Wave, offshoot.
But New Wave, it was kind of more less rough and tumble and more kind of...
Mm-hmm. The New Sincerity, the REM.
And then the mods.
And then the grunge.
Yeah.
The grungers.
And then
it's all very music related at that point.
Well, see, that's how everyone defines themselves.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a... No one says I'm a trekker anymore, do they? Unless you're like over,
really?
If you're under 20, does anyone say that anymore?
I haven't met anyone under 20 who says they're a trekker, but they very well may be.
Could be. I doubt it. Siri sucks.
What came after grunge, though? The boy bands?
That's always scene. Been there. That's Billboard Top 20.
I guess it's sort of the hipster scene now, the dot-com.
That was a dot-com. That was a resurgence of this hipster, though.
Yeah, the hipster dot-com era.
And then, I mean, there's a lot. You could write a dictionary on the whole
thing. What are we living in now? What is the, you know, is the beatniks, the hippies, the punks? What's the dominant meme in society today?
I don't think, is there a dominant meme now? I always thought it was more of a kind of a, you know, and at best an aggregation of a variety of styles that have been shown before or done before.
Is it if we finally reached a true open underground where people are in fact free to be whatever they want to be instead of having to conform to an underground ideal?
But I think it's even more so due to marketing. It's just very age based.
Well, when I think about, and maybe this is just because of the industry I work in, but when I think about the underground culture, the counterculture, it's generally EFF, open source. You know, it's like people doing cool things on the web.
So cool is the new cool?
But I can't, there's not a name for it, thank God.
Good.
There's not an identified, you know, it hasn't,
the meme with no
hasn't
name.
Quite been co-opted. Like Generation X. Generation X, well, sort of the grunge era.
Well, now you have the Generation Y. That's rolling.
Generation Y, do you have to keep doing this to us?
I don't know.
I think of people who, Burning Man is sort of emblematic of the counterculture these days. It's becoming
solidified. It depends. Yeah. I mean, like, it can be very, it could be a one set of one portion of a counterculture that, you know what I'm saying? That's not just the default. Everyone whose counterculture is like immediately into.
Of course, like, and that's never been true. But Burning Man seems to be one of the largest countercultural events, a la Lollapalooza before that.
It's true. Although, I mean, what are the big events now? I mean, that are...
Burning Man. That's what I'm saying. I can't think of any others.
There
are others. I just can't think of any right now off the top of my head.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little things going on, though. That's what I mean. Like, maybe we actually have come to a point where the counterculture is truly a counterculture and not just some forced conformity to a dominant counter idea. Just the way I feel that the beatniks and the hippies and the punks ended up. I think that's just natural social cycles, though. Something starts as a rebellion and then it ends as a conformist ideal.
But did punk ever become conformist?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it
like
did.
Like, when?
And then that's when you got the people going, no, I'm a true punk. Now, when punk started hitting the top 40, when people started to buy punk clothes in retail shops, I mean, same thing happened to grunge. Grunge was not a style. Grunge was just people buying their clothes at thrift stores, and then suddenly it was... There, you could go to Target and find flannels because these people had been buying
versus Sears, where flannels have always been on sale.
Sears was like, thank goodness. Well, no, and that's seriously the thing, because the people were wearing flannel because flannel was horribly out of style, And so the thrift stores were full of them.
I thought they
and
wore
it was nice,
they
durable,
were,
warm material.
Yeah, I thought they wore because they were out in the Pacific Northwest, and if they wanted a party outside, it was cold.
Yeah, but if you had gone into a, you know, a fashionable clothing store, they would not have been selling flannel. They would have been selling some kind of sweater.
So if I dress up like a real nerd with, like, you know, flood pants and, you know, tucked in white shirt.
Maybe that's it. Maybe geekiness is the new dominant counterculture.
But that was so turn of the century.
Well, nerd. And have you noticed nerd is replacing geek? Geek has kind of become co-opted enough that the true geeks actually call themselves nerds more often. I've noticed that.
I don't know. I think it's really ridiculous.
Nerdy has become the new geek.
Yeah, so...
Geek is passé.
Well, one thing I've noticed is it's actually not that bad to be somewhat of a, you know, higher than average intelligence.
Well, the internet has helped with that, I think.
And, you know, the thing is, I don't think most people are stupid, but I think the kind of stigma...
Most people aren't stupid. Most people are lazy. And there is that stigma that you're talking about where if you got an A in class, you want to turn it over and don't let anyone see it because they'll make fun of you.
Yeah, right. I never had that problem, dude.
You never got A's?
No, I never had that problem of needing to turn it over.
Oh, my God, I did. In my school, you did not want to get... You wanted to get a B.
I was...
Because that meant you were good, but not too smart. When you got an A, that's when everyone started giving you crap.
That must be some quirk in the Midwest.
Well,
when I went to high school, everyone was, like, super competitive. Everyone wanted, like, the top score.
Oh, yeah, not in my... It was competitive the opposite way. Everyone wanted to be the coolest screw-up.
Couldn't you just take remedial English and then just say... Awesome, dude.
Yeah, but you couldn't take it if you got A's. I mean, it wasn't a pressure to fail, but it was a pressure not to be too good or people would mock you. You're an egghead. You're a brain.
Never had that issue.
Yeah, see, that's because you went to a decent school.
I went to a school with 2,000 students.
I went to a school with 500 students.
Exactly.
There you go. It makes a difference. When I started high school in 1984, it really felt like the 70s had stuck around for a few extra years.
Yeah, probably because it did.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a while for the new decade to kick in.
It does. It always does. And when you go back and you look at stuff from the early part of a decade, it always looks like the previous decade.
It's like, why does everyone have mullets in like 93 and 94?
I think we really, really need to have a law about this. When the decade changes, come on. The styles have got to change. None of this grace period anymore. It's confusing. How can you date a movie that you're watching if it's still got the previous decade styles?
Got me, man.
Yeah. What is the style of this decade, by the way? And what is this decade even called?
See, the thing is, you don't really know what the style is until you're in the middle of that decade. Oh, 2006, technically, we are in the middle of the decade.
Well, see, I think what I've noticed is... The styles that become emblematic of a decade are actually considered a little bit crazy during the decade, and most people don't wear them, but enough people wear them and they get enough press that they're the things that stick out. Think of leg warmers. Definitely people wore them, but you didn't see people like walking the streets with them all the time.
No.
But that's emblematic of the 80s.
I remember those member-only jackets everyone
had. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But see, everyone had one of those.
That's true. I never had one
Ray-Bans
of those.
And
I was
stuff.
Not allowed to be a part of the club.
You weren't allowed.
It was members only. I figured out.
You weren't allowed
a member.
To be hip.
I'm not a member. I can't wear that jacket.
Missed out, man. Missed out.
But yeah, I mean, what is this decade called? The O's?
Some people say ought.
The oughts?
You know, like double ought. Like for whatever.
It's going to play havoc with radio stations. Because right now they can get by with 80s, 90s, and now. By 2011, they're going to have to say 80s, 90s, aughts.
Maybe they could just say the 2000s.
The O's. The single digits.
The beginning of the century.
The 20, yeah, it's bulky, though.
00, 01.
Yeah, I mean, it actually has worked out on individual
scales. You can say like 2001.
Yeah, that's worked out. People say
2006.
That. 2004. Most people say, I think, 2006, 2005.
2006.
Or 04, 05.
I think 2006 people would work better because people say, like, 1986. They don't say 1,986.
But most people do say 2004, 2005. They don't say 2005, 2006.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see after the decade ends.
That's what they're doing now. No, most people don't say ought five, except me.
Back in 85, back in, you know, 2002.
So what style is emblematic
of today?
Of this decade, whatever it's going to be called.
The internet.
Really? It's not 90s? I guess it isn't. Even though it busted in 2000, which technically is part of the 90s.
Yeah, you really don't get a pulse on the style until after that style's ended.
Yeah, but I want to figure it out.
Maybe
what are the things that are sticking out right now that people
do? Maybe it's a pseudo geek thing with the glasses.
Oh, definitely. Well, at least in the Bay Area, it is that the nerdy glasses and the jacket over a t-shirt. The jacket over a t-shirt is emblematic of this decade.
What are you talking about? People wearing jackets over t-shirts for the longest.
No, the suit jackets particularly.
Well, that was done by Don Johnson in.
I know, but that is. I mean, you see that is the hip thing, and it has to not just be any t-shirt, but a t-shirt with like a cool hip little monochrome logo. Which may or may not be meaningful at all. So, like, some throwback logo. You see that all the time. The weird, cool hip design or something with the suit coat over it.
What I've seen a lot is essentially borrowed styles from previous decades.
Yeah, you always see that. That confuses the issue. That's what you're saying. Yeah. It makes it tough to figure out what the emblem
would be. I think maybe what you're trying to get at is maybe it's, like, the new kind of metrosexual for the male, where it's a lot more... especially for the upwardly mobile.
Piracy will be a big thing. This was the age of digital piracy.
Basically, everyone's going around with eye patches.
Yeah, iPod. iPod will be very emblematic of this decade.
What else? What else?
As we rocked, I'm trying to imagine, like, what will be the...
cell phones.
The documentary. As we rocked to our iPods and the cell phones got smaller, the aughts were in decade of confusion. Oh, and then politically, we've got, you know, President Bush, the Iraq War, World Trade Center. Those are the big events of the decade. Those are always pretty easy to spot, though.
Yeah.
The actual big events.
Well, you also had Katrina, the tsunami.
Yeah. Those are the events that defined a decade. I like this because what we're engaging in right now, Roger, is instant nostalgia.
Interesting. So we're so nostalgic for what happened last month.
Yes.
Oh, man, I wish I was born last month.
Remember yesterday? That was cool.
That's just a height of hedonistic, insular, inward-looking kind of garbage.
Well, I kept noticing as I was growing up that...
It's good to notice things as you grow up.
The nostalgic, the time people were nostalgic for kept getting closer. Like... In the 70s, when I was a little kid, all the nostalgia stuff was all from, like, the 20s and the teens. It was, like, you know, the people in the straw hats playing the ragtime piano. Uh-huh. And then by the 80s, we were already nostalgic for the 50s. In the space of 10 years, it just really caught right up. And then by the 90s, people were already nostalgic for the 70s.
Yeah, you know.
So I was like, you know, it just keeps getting closer. Eventually, people are just going to be nostalgic for last hour.
Maybe. At some point, I think I'll just go back to people being nostalgic for, you know, dark ages, you know, going around.
And it'll snap all the way back to there. Or they'll get nostalgic for the future.
Again?
Nice.
No more spacesuits, please.
I'm so... Remember tomorrow.
Remember when everyone used to wear the Jiffy Pops looking jumpsuits?
I wish things were more like tomorrow.
You know, the only thing I can be really nostalgic about is New Wave.
Just really? That's the only thing you're nostalgic about?
It's the one thing that burned in my head so much. Okay, parts of the 70s, because I was a baby back then. How much did I remember? Well, I did watch Star Wars when it came out.
Yeah, I'm definitely nostalgic for Star Wars. All right, we've completed a whole episode today, Roger.
Yes, and we've managed to do it without totally rambling.
Really?
Hey, you're the one that started a nostalgia kick.
I liked it, though. I hope everyone else did, too. That's it for East Meets West, episode 24. I'm Tom Merritt.
Roger Chick.
Bye.